Howdy, I'm Zoe, reader, writer, friend, and you're listening to Broken Spine Social Club, a literary podcast for readers of words. Each week, I sit down with one of my buds to chat about their favorite book. From high modernism to high fantasy, we cover it all, getting to the heart of what makes good writing great or okay writing high impact. So without further ado, welcome to Broken Spine Social Club. Your membership is approved. When I tell you how excited I have been for this episode, you have no idea. Today we're taking it back. We are taking it way back with one of my oldest, dearest, bestest, closest friends, Kelly Leiniger Whipple. I call her Kelly Leiniger Whipple because I have known her since before the Whipple, since before the children, since before the multiple teaching degrees. I have known Kelly maybe since I was around five. We actually don't know. That's how long it's been. What we do know is that we first became close friends in Sydney High School in Sydney, Nebraska. We spent a lot of our relationship cruising Maine in my Pontiac Vibe, rolling out to the drops, swimming in irrigation ditches, all kinds of Nebraska teenage girl mayhem and nonsense. And ever since then, it's just been one of my most beloved relationships. Kelly is one of those people, and I know that you have these friendships in your life as well, where no matter how long we go without seeing each other, no matter how much life has been lived, we always come back together. And it's like we are right back in that Pontiac vibe again at 16. So I really hope you enjoyed today's episode, and not only today's episode, but next week's episode as well, because this is our first ever Broken Spine Social Club two-parter. We started chatting about Kelly's favorite book, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, and we just couldn't stop. We just kept going and going and going, which is why I've had to split this episode up into two. We get into all of it, the books, the characters, Pottermania, the J.K. Rowling of all of it. So without further ado, I'm going to leave you at part one, and don't forget to subscribe so next week you can come back and tune in for part two. I hope you enjoy the episode.
Yes.
Look at this.
Oh my, matching.
Isn't that crazy?
That is so insane.
I don't know if this is the Leiniger family original.
Oh, or if you've gotten a new copy.
Yes. Or did Matt and I combine copies at some point? Because we don't have double of everything. But then would I really take them from my family?
Here's my question. So I suppose, first of all, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so excited to be here, too, with you specifically. For those that don't know, Kelly Leiniger Whipple is probably I hope that anyone listening to this doesn't get offended by this. I think you're just my oldest friend at this stage, that I've consistently maintained on a very consistent basis.
Yes.
I try to say that so that no one's listening to this and be like, fuck you, I've known you since you were six. Like, yes, I love all of you.
Who am I?
Oh, really? Says...
Oh, your oldest friend?
Listening to this? I learned how to bleep so I can bleep that.
God.
We can say anything about anyone because I can bleep it all.
Oh, praise Jesus.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be great.
I think if you were to see any friend... from that time, you would have an easy time catching up.
Yes, exactly. I just don't do it on a regular basis. Yes. And to those that might be listening thinking, fuck you, Zoe, send me a text. I'm open. You know?
Actually, girl, no. You change numbers all the time.
That is true. I'm actually notoriously difficult to get a hold of.
I have seven different Zoes in my phone book. One's Zoe's Sydney number, Zoe's Irish number, Zoe's American number.
I've had three American numbers in the past 4 years. I've had, yes. I've maintained the same Irish number, which is good. But that doesn't really help a lot of people, I guess. So sorry to the haters. Yes. I prostrate myself.
Instagram message you.
Instagram message me and I will get back to you. Yes. That's literally the only way to get a hold of me. But all that to say, you are someone in my life who has seen me at my highest highs and at my very literal lowest lows, which is good. Cause if those were my lows, then I'm doing okay.
Then you're doing okay.
Exactly.
What comes to mind is almost getting in a car accident on the morning of prom.
Sobbing hysterically on the morning of prom. because my boyfriend dumped me that morning.
No, the night before.
The night before, you're right. He gave me a 24-hour notice, I guess.
No, not fully.
Nope, you're right. Not fully at all.
I mean, prom started at what, 8, 9? And all
PM?
That started... Yeah.
You're right. I think I got the message at like... I want to say at like 7 p.m. maybe.
That he was coming or that you guys were breaking up?
Oh, sorry. That we were breaking up the night before.
No, we were... I remember vividly. We were Ouija boarding.
Yes, in the cemetery.
And we were driving home and it was dark. It couldn't have been 7 p.m.
You're right. It couldn't have been 7 p.m. because it was like May or April. So it must have been like 9 or 10.
Yeah.
Oh, my stomach. It just like dropped again. I need to go back to therapy and work that one out. So, yeah, as Kelly mentioned, my boyfriend broke up with me the night before prom, rightly or wrongly, is a different story.
For another day.
Broke up. Kelly very kindly met me at literally 7 a.m. the next morning of her senior prom to talk me off a ledge, sobbing at Sydney, Nebraska's.
Yes. Speaking of.
Oh.
I got the burrito recipe.
Fuck yes. Is it something that you want to share or is it something that you want to gatekeep? Because I support some gatekeeping.
I mean, I feel like it's not mine to share.
No, I think that's fair. You're right.
You know, I would like I gave it to my friend Lauren.
Yeah.
She just had a baby.
Exactly.
Yes. And so like I made her a big batch when the baby was born and then they wanted the recipe. But I got the recipe. I got a picture of like a screenshot of a picture.
Ooh. They're wheels within wheels.
Yes. So it's very blurry. You have to really like think about it for a second.
You have to want it. You have to really want that recipe.
And luckily I spent a lot of time in that back kitchen where I should not have been.
No, you didn't work there.
No. If a health person came in, everyone would have been like, "Who are you?"
I will bleep as much of this as I can. Something I will say about that particular establishment is, you know, those for lattes?
Yes.
Those were not cleaned until close. They were not wiped off until close. We used to in like a cup of and then off the
at the what end if of the day. You had someone who was
fuck them.
I have an espresso machine. It's not that hard to
nope, it wasn't until I got into college and I was working at a different coffee shop and I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense.
You just
have the rag and you just do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, literally. Right in there. That's you. That's your bad.
That is my bad. That's my bad.
I remember one person that used to work there used to get very offended when pregnant women would order caffeinated drinks.
Oh.
Yes. And as a woman who is now on her second pregnancy, bitch. Give me the goddamn latte.
Well, that kind of brings us to a shared mutual starting point, which is, do you remember how we met? Do you remember the first time we met?
No.
No.
I've been thinking about this. Yeah. Since your podcast, I've listened to your podcast to get, obviously, because I want to support you, but also to get some thoughts working.
You know? Of course. Yeah, absolutely. The inspo.
Yes. And when you asked that for Sarah, I do believe was your first guest. When you asked her how you guys met, I was like, oh, shit.
Well, I'm glad you feel the same way, because I think Katie Ballou remembers how she and I first met, and she tells the story about the glow-in-the-dark stars, and this is these are my confessions. Katie Ballou, I don't remember that at all. You've just always been a part of my consciousness. Same with you, and Kelly.
And I remember meeting Katie Ballou, I will say that.
Oh, hell yeah.
I think we always knew each other or knew of each other because of our siblings. Yeah. I do remember meeting her in first grade, and then from then on, always the consciousness.
Of course, absolutely.
Yes. But I think you and I, it would have had to have been dance.
It would have had to have been dance. We were in dance together.
Because you were going to Lorenzo.
Exactly. I came into Sydney Public Schools in fourth grade. I formally remember becoming good friends with you. I think it was like maybe my sophomore year, junior year, somewhere around there, maybe? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree with that. Like, we always knew each other, always were in the same circle, but, like, friendship formed.
Yes. Oh, time. I remember we were in a study hall together, maybe?
Study hall, sophomore year. I was a sophomore, you were a freshman.
Yes.
Jane Holacek's class.
Yes, and
Mike Wilson.
Mike Wilson. Yeah, he was in there
Old
too.
Old Man River.
Yeah,
yes.
That's probably it. Like, that's probably the clearest, earliest memory I have.
Yes, yes. Of, and like, that's funny because I do think we will be speaking about Jane Holacek's Study Hall a little bit more.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
Yes,
it'll be fun. Okay, hell yeah. Well, there you go. Suffice it to say, we've been part of each other's consciousness for a very long time now. Mm-hmm. And it's just been a legacy of greatness.
Yes, yes. Fun activities, fun times.
Fun activities. Came to Ireland, we got hot sacks.
Yes, oh God. Did you ever respond to my good, if that's a good deal or not?
I didn't, but it's not a good deal because I happen to know someone who is actually going over to Fair Era next month and who can possibly bring back some hot sack packets.
Okay. You know, it's doesn't me. Morris's family oh my God, you're going back next week? Next month?
Next month, yeah, for wedding.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
That'll be so fun.
I will happily bring you back some hot sack packs.
Please do. Please do. I will figure out how to make those. That can be a fun postpartum thing.
Oh, that'll be a way fun postpartum thing. Yes. Oh, hell yeah.
Hell yes. Making hot sacks.
You got an air fryer?
No, but I can get one.
Oh, Kelly, you should.
Is it? Matt thinks that there's no difference between an air fryer and a toaster oven.
Yeah. Like a convection oven.
And he was very upset when I demanded a toaster for one of our wedding gifts. It's like, we don't need a regular toaster, and I hate making toast in a, like a...
I hate making... My mom has one, too, and it's such a pain in the ass.
Yes, yes. It literally goes from, like, white, soft dough to burnt to a crisp in under one... Like, it takes 20 minutes.
It takes forever.
And it all happens... Yeah, in that 10-second situation, you have burnt toast.
Yeah, you became a mother.
Yes.
It was like, whoa. You know?
Holy shit. There's a whole ass baby.
There's a whole ass baby. There are nearly two.
Yes. We're 10 weeks from two babies.
10 weeks from two babies. Is Joe getting excited?
So she called. Have I told you this? She calls it Baby Shrek.
Oh my God. What? Why?
So I found out I was pregnant in November, and we were watching like The Grinch a lot. Mm. And that got kicked off at one point because Christmas ended.
Right.
And Shrek was there, and I think she just picked that one because it was green. So she watched Shrek maybe once or twice before we had the chance to tell her that, like, we were pregnant.
Uh-huh.
So I told her, I was like, hey, we're going to have a baby. You know, what should we name it? And she just goes, Baby Shrek.
Oh, my God, I love.
Yeah, didn't even think twice about it. And she has stuck with it. I've asked her multiple times since. I've asked her, like, about other names, and it's been Baby Shrek.
She knows, she's a girl who knows what she wants.
Yes,
fully
yes.
Support. That is so funny.
Good. And she has, like, when she sees babies, she talks about it. Or she talks about when she was a baby. And so I think she's like, I think we're getting there.
Babies talking about babies is so cute.
She's always like, did I do that when I was a baby?
Today, the book that we are talking about is Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire by J.K. Rowling. So this is full confession to yourself and my listeners. I finished this morning because I thought that we were reading the first one, and I was a bit cocky, and I was like, I'll get that through in like 2 days. It's a little book. And then a week ago, you're like, no, it's The Goblet of Fire. And I was like, yes, certainly.
The biggest
one.
I don't know. Actually, I think the fifth might technically be bigger.
I think so too.
But it is a massive book that is written for children.
Yeah, it's huge. Like, yes. But then the thing is, I remember people flying through these.
Yes.
Like, yeah, much quicker probably than it took me to read this. This is the book we're reading. It's the fourth in the series. This is going to be an interesting episode because Harry Potter is Harry Potter. It doesn't need to be said. It is probably, certainly, our generation's biggest, most popular reading experience. Arguably the generation after us, and maybe even the generation before us. So there's a lot that almost doesn't even need to be said about Harry Potter. It's like, where do you even start with this? Can't look at the sun. It's too big. You'll blind yourself. So I guess before we even get into the J.K. Rowling of it, the Harry Potter of it, I want to know, do you remember the first time you read, not even necessarily this one, but any Harry Potter?
Yes.
Your Potterhead, if you will.
Yes, yeah, a little bit. I will say it was third grade. Our teacher read the first book. And as she was reading the first book, in my mind, I was like, oh, I can start the second book. So I was like trying to read them at the same time. And I remember vividly being like, I don't remember any of these fucking people. Who are the Dursleys? What are they talking about? And that might be because, you know, when you're reading it in class, you have 15 minutes. It takes you all year. Mm-hmm. It's very disconnected. And then at the end of the year, I remember opening up the third book. Like, and I remember that vividly. Like, you know, the new book smell.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I would say that really my mom is probably the most thankful, because that probably started my, like, reading life.
Right.
Right. Exactly. Before that, it was, I would read every so often, but my mom really wanted us to read more than we were doing. And I think part of that being that none of my siblings really read. So she was like, I have one last one.
Please.
Please read. And she knew it was good for our education.
Right, exactly.
And then after that, like, I think between the fourth and the fourth grade and fifth grade is, I think, when I read Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. I remember taking, like, the accelerated reader quiz on it. I remember reading it in, like, the fifth grade Becky Sager's little science room.
Oh, that was, sorry, that was a fab classroom.
It was, yes.
Like, she had it really decked out for science.
Yes, yes. And there was, like, a back room. And she always gave us, like, 45 minutes of read time every day.
Yeah.
If not more. I remember reading it in that back room. Like, Katie Ballou was there, obviously. The fifth book, I think I read the next year. I remember the fifth book coming out. It was, like, the same week my grandpa died.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and my mom...
A lot of emotion.
Yeah, but my mom always had to read the books first because she read them quicker. It took me, like, 6 months. Took her 6 days. So I let her read them first.
That's actually... Sorry, super quick. That was what I was going to say at the beginning of this episode, was Morris and I were talking about it. And he's... Or no, sorry. I was talking to my friend Ross about it, whose episode comes out tomorrow. Ooh. And he was saying that in his family, they had a hierarchy. And it was
really?
Like... Yeah, it was like Ross's mom read it first, and then his older sister, then he got it, then Lachlan, and then the dad, maybe.
Wow.
And eventually the hierarchy switched because Lachlan became a faster reader than Ross. And Morris was saying that, I think he was saying that he used to read them first, and then he'd give it to Dennis until, like, maybe the sixth one came out, and then they both got their own copy because they're going to be fighting over, like, who would get to read it first.
I don't remember the sixth book coming out as vividly as I do the seventh. But I remember getting, like, I think we were gone or something, so I had to get mine later. But I remember getting, like, the Bertie Bott's Every Flavored Beans with it.
Exactly.
At the book corner.
Mm-hmm.
And the seventh book, fun little story, I was on a first date.
Oh, my God. Yes. With who? Again, I can bleep it.
Yes, please do.
This is the one I'll leave unbleeped. An Easter egg for those who are really invested in the Sydney lore. Aww.
Yeah.
Cute.
It was our first date, and we at the end of it, I went and got the seventh Harry Potter book. And but that might have been the sixth, because of Dumbledore. I remember reading it. They're, like, intertwining, really.
Right, exactly. And when your grandfather died and you were reading the fifth, was that an emotional experience?
I think it was less of an emotional experience as it was just, like, a very, like, memorable moment. Because
right,
I remember,
exactly.
like, getting the book and, like, looking at it and being like, this is a chunker. It's going to take me a while to read. And, like, that just being part of, like, the thought process. Mm-hmm. My grandpa had a second stroke, and so he was sick for about 2 or 3 weeks. It felt like 7 months.
Yeah,
we were going back and forth to Hastings with my mom, and so to me it felt like it lasted forever. So I think that's why it's so ingrained, because that was, like, a very long and short time for me in that very... So I just, like, remember it coming out. I remember, like, looking at it.
And then, well, something I think we'll talk about, too, when we get into this book is I feel like the fourth book is where things kind of change for me, where it's, like, this isn't really a kid's story anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the readers, I almost feel, are growing up with the characters. It'll always be, like, a YA, like a children's book, but there's something very adult about what happens after the Triwizard Tournament, which we can get into later.
And I feel like I did not catch on until... I have a few notes in there about, like, what I did and did not see as a child versus as reading it again. And this, I will say, is probably, like, my least read of the series.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's probably... I remember in my head, it's, like, that long-ass book. mm-hmm. takes forever to read, blah, blah.
Just to give anyone who doesn't know Harry Potter, if you've been living under a rock your entire life, or if you were raised in a fundamentalist Christian household, because I actually knew a couple of kids who weren't allowed to read Harry Potter. Basically, Harry Potter is a series of 7 children's fantasy books. It has spawned a global movement. It has reignited generational love for reading. The first one came out, I think, in like 97, maybe? 98. Okay. They concern a young wizard boy, Harry Potter, who is an orphan. He lives with his uncle and his aunt and his cousin, the Dursleys. He is pretty seriously abused, which we can get into mm-hmm. in a minute. Like, this is some trauma has been happening for this boy. His parents are dead. He's an orphan. He's been raised by this family since he was a baby, his mother's sister's family. And then on his 11th birthday, he finds out, he's actually a wizard, Harry. In that infamous line. Not infamous, just famous. It's not a bad line.
Just infamous.
It's infamous. And from thence on, he is whisked away to the wonderful Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry, where he meets his friends Ron and Hermione. He partakes in wizarding lessons amongst a wacky and zany cast of characters. And the primary thrust of the story is the resurgence and reemergence of the evil Lord Voldemort, who killed Harry Potter's parents when he was just a baby. Harry Potter is the boy who lived. Everyone else died. He lived, and it is his kind of battle, good versus evil, as he is growing up, going through puberty, but also saving the magic world again from Lord Voldemort, maybe.
Again and again and again.
And he just doesn't fucking stop this kid.
No,
Jesus.
No, God, just keeps going.
A little bit about the book's author, J.K. Rowling, which just some very high-level information about her. Born the 31st of July, 1965, as Joanne Rowling. Jo is what she goes by, actually, interestingly. A little Easter egg there for Kelly's own child.
That's not who Jo is named after. No.
This episode is just all about canceling Kelly.
Canceling Kelly. Get me canceled.
The cancellation station. Beep, beep, Hogwarts Express.
Let's go.
Her parents were in the Navy. She was a typical kind of, as every child that eventually becomes an author, she was a very bookish child, loved The Wind in the Willows, loved Richard Scarry books. She seems to have had a rather difficult teenagedom into early adulthood. I think when she was a teenager, her mom became quite sick with MS, and it put a lot of strain on the family life. She does not have a good relationship with her father. Her mother died when she was, I think, studying French at the University of Exeter, where, kind of interestingly, throughout her entire schooling career, they've interviewed past professors at university, teachers at secondary school have all kind of said that she was, you know, she was an average student. She was good. She wasn't exceptional, but, you know, she was decent. She worked as a bilingual secretary at Amnesty International, and just, again, like, seems to have kind of a strange early adulthood. She was kind of back and forth. Her boyfriend, when she was a young woman, lived in Manchester. She was living in London. She was once on the train from London to Manchester, and there was a 4-hour train delay. And that's where she first came up with the characters of Ron, Harry, and Hermione. They came to her, and she didn't have, like, a notepad and pen, so I think she just sat on this train for 4 hours and thought about them.
Back
before your notes app.
Yeah.
Exactly. Clearly not a very writerly writer, if I may say so. Didn't have a fucking notebook. I don't go anywhere without a notebook.
Okay. Yeah. What do you do? Just not write stuff down?
Like, what was she doing? Like, did she, like, you could even write in the fucking bare pages in the back of whatever book you're reading. Was she just sitting there?
Or, like, a napkin? Is this a on napkin? A train?
Exactly. Yeah, hello. She actually, weirdly, a lot of important moments on her life seem to have happened in trains. So, like, her parents met on a train, and then she came up with these characters on a train, and then, like, all the characters in Harry Potter meet on a train.
You know, I think that's a good way to ask for better public transport.
I think so, too. Look at what can happen if we would invest in our public transport. More Harry Potters.
More Harry Potters. People can meet.
People can meet, exactly. Third space.
Yeah.
In 1991, she moved to Porto, Portugal to teach English, where she met her first husband, a Portuguese TV journalist. She was being domestically abused by her husband, had a baby, eventually left her abusive husband, moved back to Edinburgh, where her sister was living. And during this whole time, she was working on early drafts of Harry Potter. And this is kind of a critical core part of the Harry Potter story, that she was this penniless divorcee living off of social welfare in the UK, and then wrote Harry Potter and became one of the wealthiest, if not the wealthiest, author that has lived in modern era. The UK 12 publishers actually rejected Harry Potter before she got it published, which is crazy.
Can but you imagine being that guy? Feel, like the 11th place.
I hope someone got comes to you. Fired.
Yeah. But like, exactly. I mean, think about, like, just think about, like, how much money that guy didn't make. I assume the it's a man.
It has to be a man.
Yes. Like, knowing that you could have been set. Like, you would have been fine. Your children would have been set.
And I think I read that, I don't know his last name, Nigel something, was the head of Bloomsbury Publishing. And he said he picked it up because he gave it to, like, his 8-year-old daughter. It was like, here, give this a go. And she couldn't put it down, and she wanted more. And he was like, okay, then that's why we're going to pick it up, which is cool.
Check her.
She has written some adult fiction under the name Robert Galbraith, and she has been mired in controversy over the last 3 or 4 years, which this is, I suppose, part of the conversation that I want to have, which is something that you brought up in your notes, which is art versus artist. So I suppose, do we talk about her now? Do we talk about the book and then come back to her?
You know, I think we can kind of do a... Well, let's talk about why I chose the book.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I want to talk about that first.
Because I don't want people to be like, this girl's stuck in 2010. She's still reading Harry Potter, you know?
Yeah,
does
this
she
girl's
not
a
know
bit,
what's happening?
This girl's a bit cringe, isn't she?
Yeah.
Also, wait. Before we go into that, two things I want to do really quick. First, just give a little overview of what's been happening before this book so the audience knows. But the second and more critical is, you're a Hufflepuff, right?
Yes.
I could only imagine. I didn't even need to know. I figured it out.
Baby Hufflepuff all the way through.
Hell yeah. You're so friendly. How could you not be?
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Which one do you think I am?
Ooh. A Ravenclaw.
Yeah. That's what Morris says too.
What do you think you are?
I definitely think I am a Ravenclaw. I think that, much like Harry himself, I could have been a Slytherin.
You know what? Matt is a Slytherin.
What?
Yes. Proudly.
Shock twist.
Yes. So, like, we gave Joe, like, Slytherin pajamas.
That's adorable. Oh, my God, little Slytherin gym jams.
She calls them her comfy cozy jammies. I don't know why. Like, they are from one specific brand that we don't buy from normally because they're a little more expensive.
Right.
And they just grow too fast.
Yeah.
And so maybe they're feel different on her skin, but
that is so cute. Obsessed.
Yes. And she doesn't like don't even notice there's snakes on her or anything.
Oh my God. That's so, just she is a Slytherin baby.
Honestly, there's times where I'm like, girl.
Girl, hold on.
Girl.
Well, that's also something I want to talk about. We'll get to that in a minute. But before that, super, super quick overview of what's been going on in the series up until this point. As we mentioned before, Harry has been studying at Hogwarts. He goes home every summer to the Dursleys. There have been a couple of wild adventures. Kind of every year he has a run-in with Lord Voldemort trying to come back. He's this kind of like eldritch soul spirit that's kind of wandering from place to place trying to gain purchase for like a body. But he's been thus unsuccessful because Harry and his band of friends constantly defeat him. Where this book picks up is it's right before Harry's fourth year at Hogwarts. He is living with the Dursleys again for the summer when his good buddy Ron sends him an owl, which is how post is delivered in the magic world, and says, why don't you come along with us to the Quidditch World Cup, where Ireland is going to be playing Bulgaria. Okay.
What a weird combination.
What a weird combination. So that's where the book picks up. Kind of nothing too important. You don't really need a lot of background, to be honest. Like, all you need to know is that Harry was almost killed by Voldemort. He lives. He's been battling him. He's been winning.
Well, the end of the third book, Voldemort gets his servant
back
in
Wormtail. Yes, that is true. Exactly. That should be said. Yes, he gets his servant back. Wormtail, has been posing as this like little boy's rat for 12 years. That's actually fucking weird.
Yeah, I don't think I never like thought it was weird until I became an adult and I was like, can you imagine?
Like a parent?
Yeah. And also, like, do the Weasley parents ever figure it out that Wormtail? I mean, maybe not, because that would include Sirius Black and that would be a whole thing, but
that's true.
Did they ever ask Ron what happened to the rat?
That's one of those things, like, you know, when you're in those early stages of puberty and it's like something that you like probably could and probably should tell your parents, but it's like, there's, I know that there's something weird about it, so I'm just not gonna. Like, I feel like he wouldn't. I feel like we were just like, oh, the rat died of natural causes.
Yeah. It's gone now.
Don't worry about that.
And I think a big theme in this book, in this series, is the lack of parents.
Yes. Where are the parents?
Where are the parents? And I guess that makes sense because you want to write for kids and kids don't ever think they need their parents. Mm-hmm. But like the amount of times I've asked, like, where are the parents? Is this just a British boarding school situation, or is this just like we just excluded the parents for this purposely?
It brings up a question about the whole role of Hogwarts in general, because Hogwarts actually, especially after reading this book, doesn't even seem to be like a school. It's almost like a cultural bastion of like ethics and like, I don't know how to describe it. For example, in the first book, when they have the Sorcerer's Stone in Hogwarts, it's like, why?
Yeah.
Like, why is the school the most secure place? Shouldn't there be like other places in this entire society that are better than the school?
And like, I know it, like Gringotts got robbed, blah blah blah, but you couldn't find just a better place for it, like a better part in Gringotts. Like,
yeah, it seems like the world is very quiet and everything happens at school, which I guess is true when you are that age, your entire life.
Yes. Anyway, forget about the rest of the world.
Tell me about why you chose this book. Why this one?
It's kind of a long story that kind of goes into two things.
Ooh.
I've had a very rough winter and spring.
Yes, you have. I'm
pregnant. Mm-hmm. And pregnancy has always been very light on my body, but it's been very rough on my mind.
Mm. Ooh, great way to put it.
Hormones are quite crazy. And, you know, I'm being pregnant, hormones are more than there usually are. It's winter. I live in Northeast Ohio. It is dingy. It is dark. Mm-hmm. It is cold. I wasn't vibing well with that. I'm trying to find my place in the world is becoming a second mother while still trying to be a friend, a professional, a wife, but also a Kelly. And then I've had an uncle who's been sick and who was getting more and more sick, and that was kind of weighing on me. And then it was just, I was really, really homesick for Nebraska. And I was like, I was falling apart, one might say. Mm-hmm. So I read Willa Cather, not O Pioneers. What's the other
my
one?
My Kathy senses are tingling. My Antonia.
My Antonia. Really to kind of just get like that home sense mm-hmm. vibe. And that was very nice. And I was like, ooh, you know, I should keep reading. And we were watching the Harry Potter movies just as something to do. And I was like, you know, I don't remember a lot from the fourth. It's a good place to read. It's a comfortable place to read. These books are comfortable for me. They remind me of home. They remind me of easier times. You know what happens in them. That mm-hmm. all finishes with a cute little bow on top. It's not too dark. Mm-hmm. Like the Hunger Games really fucked me up.
Yeah.
A bit. Defo. I remember the first time I read those, I like couldn't think for a week. Hunger Games I like a lot. I just couldn't read those right now. I was already in a dark space twilight. I just never got into. But mm-hmm. Harry Potter was like a nice comforting place. But at the same time of me thinking that, all this stuff with J.K. Rowling going on really bothers me because mm-hmm. I find these books very comforting. I find these books a great place to relax and to hide from things I don't want to deal with at the moment. And I know a lot of people felt that way too. And I think how J.K. Rowling is as a person mm-hmm. has alienated a lot of people, and that's not fair.
Yeah.
So, like, I wanted to come and talk about just that although J.K. Rowling sucks, we can still take this back.
Definitely. Yeah. I completely agree with you. I might say something a little shocking. I don't know if you know this about me because I truly keep it a little bit under wraps because I don't want to get ostracized in normative society for this. I was not a Harry Potter person. They never struck me. I never really got into them. I have never really had that sense of nostalgia for them. I'm quite stupid, and so I get very confused. And I still do. Like, since I've been reading this, Morris and I have been rewatching all the movies as well. And this is our own fucking fault. We've been, like, going backwards. Like, we did Goblet of Fire, Azkaban, Secrets, Sorcerer's Stone, and then, like, tomorrow we'll go forward to Order of the Phoenix. And we were watching the Sorcerer's Stone last night, and I was like, sorry, how the fuck did he get, like, that map again? Like, I'd already forgotten it. And yes, that's how yes. I feel with Harry Potter is I'm constantly like, wait, who the hell was that? Yada, yada, yada.
Yes. No, and I think rereading this book, I was like, there is so much. I don't know if I just only remember the movie and I just forget everything that wasn't included. Because I did the fourth and then the fifth and the sixth and the seventh. Mm-hmm. I read them through all of them. And I feel like I've read these books multiple times. Every time I reread them, I'm like, oh, there's like literally 50% of this book that I completely forgot.
And I think rewatching the movies, I really think what did it for me was Lupin and Sirius. I think having two new characters who turn into dogs was like too much. Far too. I could only handle one thing at a time.
They turn into dogs, both of them? No.
That's where I draw the line. But what I will say is, having read this, I am now bet in. Like, I finished it this morning. I was tearing up at some of the stuff at the end. And so I can only imagine how painful what has happened with J.K. Rowling has been for people who were either big fans like yourself or trans fans or fans who are on the LGBTQ plus spectrum. So I guess that's maybe a good place to go into a little bit here, because there's no point in not talking about it. Her name mm-hmm. now and these books are kind of synonymous with this scandal that's happened with her, which mm-hmm. I was doing a little bit of research into it. And what seems to have happened, and this is also something that I want to talk about with regards to the book and the world of Harry Potter as well. Politically, she is quite centrist, I think, actually, in the scope of things. For example, she lives in Edinburgh, but she voted for Scotland to stay in the 2014 independence referendum. So
stay
they had
in the
a
UK or
stay home? Stay in the UK. Yep. So okay. In 2014, Scotland put it to a vote where they leave the UK. And she was very kind of, no, we should stay within the UK.
And would you say like a more liberal stance would have been to leave?
Yes, exactly. Okay. And then on the flip side of that, she was very opposed to Brexit. She gives a lot to charity. I think she has like not maintained billionaire status because she does give so much of her wealth away, which is cool. Although she's still fucking crazy wealthy. Not that that's necessarily a moral bad thing, just to be mentioned. But essentially all of this kicked off in 2020, in June 2020, where there was an article referencing people who menstruate. And she tweeted, it is not my position to say what is trans or transphobic or not, but she tweeted something that I would say was just very callous and maybe a bit thoughtless and kind of mean, which the tweets mentioned something about people who menstruate, and she tweeted something like, people who menstruate, womban, woola, wo-wo. Like, it was some like really like boomery, like,
don't you mean woman?
Yeah. Exactly. Yes.
Like, I remember vividly reading that tweet. Being
like, yeah. Wo-wo? Like,
can't you say woman?
Like, you've written fucking a million books. You can't like vocalize your thoughts any better than that. Like, no. Embarrassing. And then instead of when people kind of called her out and were like, whoa, J.K. Rowling, she buckled down. And instead of kind of saying like, well, actually, I apologize. This is what I mean. This is where I'm coming from. She kind of buckled down for a while there, kind of throughout the summer of 2020. She's tweeting all this kind of shit. When I was reading the tweets, purely to me, it seemed that she was more concerned with distinction of language than hurting people, maybe. I don't know if that was her intention, but I actually don't think that's the issue. I think that she was being just very thoughtless, careless, sarcastic with some of the comments she was making. So for a while, these tweets just kind of seemed to be like she was trying to make a point about something, but maybe wasn't saying it quite right. But instead of just shutting the fuck up, listening and learning, she just kept going and going and going and going and going. And now, rightfully so, her fan base, the actors in the films, media publications have come out and have been like, that's enough. Like, calm down now, J.K. Rowling. You're a shitty person. Like, you can't be saying that kind of stuff now.
You can't be saying that stuff. And I have done, since we wanted to talk about this, I started researching this. One, it's ruined my Al Gore rhythm.
Yeah.
My Al Gore's rhythm.
Excellent.
I'll see tweets that'll be like, look at this man destroying womanhood. And it's just like a trans woman waving. Like, people are very hateful. But that being said, before I get there, I was looking at it again today. And I think maybe at the beginning, maybe she was just saying things wanted to touch more base on language. She's quite mean.
Yes. And I think that's what, like, going back to this idea of, like, I actually don't know if the language matters, because she's just being quite callous and mean.
Like,
and there's
she
no need
will,
for that.
Like, she misgenders people constantly, mm-hmm. purposefully and meanly. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard dead naming someone, but people have talked about how she dead names people. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where it's her pinned tweet, and it's like 17 inches long. And it talks about how she believes a woman is defined by their biological sex, and that gender isn't a thing. Gender is not disconnected from your sex. It is the same thing. And that it's almost like, it reminds me a lot of that old stereotype of, like, a gay man is automatically a pedophile.
Yes, yeah.
A trans woman is automatically trying to hurt women.
Yes, exactly.
Biological women.
And yeah. You're right. She's just been mean. Yes. And there's no need for that. Besides the fact that her ideas are certainly not my ideas, and I don't think the larger trans community's ideas, she's just being a bitch. And then where it really was like, oh, come on now, J.K. Rowling, like, shut the fuck up. She wrote two books, I think under Robert Galbraith, in 2020. The book Trouble Blood is about a man who dresses up as a woman to hunt and murder cis women, which is, like...
That is literally her fear.
Shocking.
That is her main fear.
That is her main fear, which is insane.
It is that combination. Yeah, in her pinned tweet, she talks about how if you are born biologically a man... You never lose that quickness and that strength, which I think many doctors would disagree with on that. But
yeah,
that's another point entirely. And if you are a trans woman, you are taking away the rights that people have fought for generations. And it's weird to think like that, because I don't get it.
I don't get it either.
I think a big part of it is like you look at trans women on TikTok and things like that, like how is their existence hurting my rights?
Literally not. But that's like that's so the issue with so many of these issues, right?
Yes.
Where it's like a zero sum game. Like, if you have this, it's taking away from me, where it's like, no, there's just like enough cake for everyone. And like, again, I think cake can be different and look different for different people. But yeah, it's not hurting anyone. In 2022, she wrote a book called The Ink Black Heart, which is about a YouTube animator who is doxxed and then murdered for her racist, transphobic, and ableist cartoons.
You know what? I bet that's one of JK's fears.
Totally.
She will be get.
So, a couple of things, and I don't quite know how to, like, parse them all in my brain when I think back to Harry Potter. The first one is this idea of black and white thinking, which is something that I see across all facets of culture, and it's something that is a bit concerning to me, which is this is this way, this is that way, there is no gray space here, there's no space for nuance. I think that the Harry Potter books, or certainly this one when I read it, she touches on gray space but pulls it back at the last minute. Like, I see a lot of black and white parts of this book, which is really comforting and nice, because a simple way to look at the world is a very simple way to look at the world. Mm-hmm. So a little foolish example is the houses. Like, okay, there's just one house where all the evil kids go. Like,
you're evil. What? You have one choice.
Exactly. It's like, oh, we just know that all the evil kids go into Slytherin. It's like,
and you told me not one Ravenclaw went bad, not one Gryffindor, not one Hufflepuff.
No, only evil Slytherin.
Evil Slytherin.
And in this book too, like, there's a point in The Goblet of Fire where it's a Rita Skeeter article, and she's talking about how Harry Potter is a parcel mouth, which means he can talk to snakes. He talks to snakes, he knows. And there's this whole section about, like, everyone knows that anything to do with snakes is dark magic and evil and should not be trusted. It's like, there's a whole fucking house full of kids at Hogwarts with snakes.
Yes. Why is, if it's so evil, why are we like, here?
Yeah.
Here's exactly. Snakes right here. They're evil. You can join this house if you want.
Exactly. Go. That way we know who the bad ones are.
That's like literally like not literally, but that's kind of like having like a white powerhouse.
It's totally like having a white powerhouse.
Yeah. And it's like, no, you can join that one if you're evil. But why are you having it at your school?
Don't have it. Get rid of it.
Don't like, allow that to bad. Be there.
And then, sorry. There's a scene, again, I'm sure this is in the book, I don't know, and so I probably shouldn't even be referencing it, but when we were watching Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone last night, it's the very, like, last scene. They're all at, like, the, you know, house cup award dinner, and Slytherin has won. And, like, Dumbledore is up at the head table, and he announces, Slytherin has won, this is how many points they have won. They have won. However...
But.
I'm going to give Harry Potter, Hermione, and Ron an extra combined 2,000 points. So they actually win.
Like, and then Neville gets 10 to really bust it up.
Exactly. Good for you, fucking Neville.
I was doing more research, and I was reading a book that was about Snape that is not written by J.K. Rowling. It's written by somebody else.
Excited about this. Okay.
Yes. And one thing she points out in that is that, one, Snape is their only defender. That's the big reason we're talking about Slytherin. But two... Right then and there, it shows you can be mean to the people we all think are bad, probably.
Yes.
Like, if as a school, even Dumbledore, even McGonagall, they all think these people are mean, even though maybe they're not, who knows, you can be mean to them, and you can hate them, and you can do really shitty things at the end of the year.
You can embarrass these 11-year-old kids in front of the entire school. 11-year-old
children. 11-year-old, 12-year-old, 13-year-olds, like, babies.
Exactly. And I think that, like, that's what it is for me, is that, like, it's that black and white thinking. Like, people are who they are, and there is no changing that. Even though she states, like, there's a line in the book that Dumbledore says, I highlighted it at the end of The Goblet of Fire. I'm going to pull it up super quick, because it is quite a good line.
I have that one also. Oh. Is he talking to Cornelius Fudge?
Yep. And he says, here we go. Page 208. 708. You read it.
You fail to recognize that it matters not what someone is born, but what they grow to be.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I've thought a lot about this J.K. Rowling business is because Joe has Harry Potter sheets in her crib, and one of them says that exact same line over where the baby would be sleeping, right?
Aww.
Yeah, yeah. So you're telling me that Draco Malfoy is just going to be evil the entire
exactly.
time?
Exactly, exactly. Like, and it comes back to this issue, all this fucking shit she's tweeting, which is like, no. People are who they are born as, and that's that. And there is no and even within that, like her stereotypes of gender, even within those like confines of like, okay, so men are just evil too? Like men are just out to hurt women? Is like, I don't quite.
But not a normal man.
No, no, I don't quite
quote
get
unquote.
Like, what are you trying to say? Something not good. And so you see it with, like, with regards to Slytherin. And, yeah, so Malfoy's just evil. He's never given a chance.
I don't want to say arc. I don't know. His character development's interesting because by the end, you know, he doesn't fight in the last scene. And his parents aren't fighting in the last scene. All they care about is their son and getting out of that. They do not want to support Voldemort anymore. And then Snape, in general, his business of becoming evil but not really, he is the definition of gray space.
Yes, and he's the most interesting character to me. Like, after reading this, after rewatching the movies, like, I want more Snape content. Yes. I'm obsessed with Snape.
I think Snape is very interesting because he just... And this is from that book I was telling you about. I read this book over... It was, like, a free Kindle book. And I read it when I first got my Kindle on our honeymoon, so, like, 7 years ago.
I've been trying to reread it. Snape on my honeymoon.
Right. he is someone that teaches us that there's gray space and there's also room for redemption. But also at the same time, like, even though he becomes this character that we consider quote-unquote good, he was still a bully.
Yeah. And I think even, like, kind of zooming out from Snape, looking at the, like, structure of this universe, which is Voldemort's just evil. Like, I don't quite know what to do with that, except for that, like, he's just evil.
And in the sixth book, when you, like, go back through his life... Mm-hmm. There wasn't, like, a turning point other than, like, well, he was born in an orphanage.
That's what I mean. Like, I want to see a reason why someone, like, decides to kill all Muggles and, like, mudbloods.
Is the reason because his dad was Muggle and his mom loved his dad? Is the reason that he's a descendant of Slytherin?
Which, again, would just be, okay, then he's just evil, because Slytherin was evil. And this black and white idea of, like, there's good, there... And, again, this is a children's book, which I'm constantly trying to remind myself. Caveat. This is for children. I keep coming to this idea of, like, can bad people do good things? Can good people do bad things? In the lived reality of the world, yes. Mm-hmm. In the world of Harry Potter, it seems a little bit more complicated. What I'll say is, like, I think that the stories do a good job of having a lot of fun twists, mm-hmm. but the moral structure is still there. So, oh my God, Ginny's the one that opened the chamber because Voldemort was, like, compelling her to. My God, it's not actually Mad-Eye Moody, it's Barty Crouch, but Barty Crouch is still serving Voldemort. Like, there are these, like, kind of fun little, like, ugh, like, gotcha, but they don't really change the structure of there's just this evil guy and then there's good guys, and that's kind of it. Don't call it a cliffhanger, because we'll be back next week to pick up on today's wonderful conversation with Kelly Whipple about Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. I know, serious topics. We really got into it this week, and next week is no different. If you loved this episode as much as I love you, please do me a solid. Rate, review, leave us 5 stars. Don't forget to subscribe and follow. And if you just need more Broken Spine bookish content, you can find us over on Instagram at Broken Spine Social Club SC. We'll be back next week with Kelly Whipple to continue our conversation about Harry Potter. And in the meantime, I hope you keep reading whatever keeps the pages turning.